Liberty Talk Live. Welcome to Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, and you can watch Liberty Conspiracy live each Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter /X at Gard Goldsmith. It's G-A-R-D Goldsmith. You also can visit my Substack, Gardner Goldsmith, G-A-R-D-N-E-R, and find my articles on economics and breaking news at mrctv.org. Okay, it's time for us to hear from the machine. What machine is it? It is, my friends, the thing that welcomes our newsflash. It is the mothership.
Does Ukraine have chemical or biological weapons?
Ukraine has biological research facilities.
Yes? Oh, hello.
Hello. We're Mary's parents.
Oh, well, come on in, fellas. Hold it a second. Mary's parents burned to death last year. Wait a minute. I know you guys. You're from the News Flash.
What's on tap? It's wartime.
Yeah.
What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Yeah.
What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Say it again, y'all.
You tell him, Edwin. Edwin is a star in my book, pun intended.
Absolutely.
Listen to that voice.
I despise costing me the destruction of innocent lives.
All right, everybody, let's get to it. The destruction of innocent lives. What is the news? What is the word, Thunderbird? Well, of course. The big word is, of course. Yes, let's turn, in fact, over to anti-war because they'll give us the latest among many of their big stories. Victoria Nuland, notorious Russia hawk, resigning from the State Department. Nuland is known for her role in the 2014 coup in Ukraine. Now, we'll get into that a little bit more in just a little while. This is just the first blush news flash, my friends. That is just wild stuff. Absolutely wild. Wild stuff. That's right. First, let's talk about democracy, the word they keep using all the time, because stealing and coercion are wrong unless the majority votes to make them common practice. All right. Or as Hans Hermann Hoppe might say, his name is actually pronounced Hoppe, but I love it when people mispronounce it. Hans Hermann Hoppe. As Hans Hermann Hoppe has said, democracy has nothing to do with freedom. Democracy is a soft variant of communism, and rarely in the history of ideas has it been taken for anything else. Thank you, Professor Hoppe. You are awesome. Thank you for your writing. That is super cool. Okay, everybody. And let's talk about our first major story. Our first major story is about Victoria Nuland resigning. So you probably saw that on my Twitter feed. Let's go back to antiwar.com. Dave DeCamp wrote this one. Going to cover this briefly. There's another very good piece from American Conservative that I think you might enjoy. Plus, I want to recap a couple major items. Victoria Nuland, a notorious Russia hawk, most known for her role in the 2014 coup in Ukraine, will be retiring from the State Department in the coming weeks, Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced on Tuesday. Nuland has worked as the Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs since 2021 and served as the acting Deputy Secretary of State for a few months until the position was filled by Kurt Campbell, a notorious China hawk. Nuland is the wife of Robert Kagan, one of the most influential American neoconservatives and has worked for multiple administrations. In the George W. Bush administration, she served as deputy foreign policy minister to then Vice President Dick Cheney from 2003 to 2005, and later as the U.S. representative to NATO. In the Obama administration, Nuland worked as a State Department spokeswoman and then as the Assistant Secretary of State for European and Eurasian Affairs. Yes, and boy, the affairs got very interesting, didn't they? From where she supported the Maidan protests, otherwise known as the coup, in Ukraine that led to the overthrow of former President Viktor Yanukovych. So let's enjoy some other memories. Don't forget this, everybody. As I've mentioned a couple times over the past few weeks, Victoria Nuland seems to be the one who was involved in getting rid of Prime Minister Imran Khan from Pakistan. Khan! That's right. That's right. After she got in touch through a cable with some of the folks in the military, and then our folks in the military contacted their folks in the military, and all of a sudden, what happened? Imran Khan was out, and he's now under arrest. Yeah, even though he's massively popular, and I haven't seen any real charges against him. The U.S. State Department encouraged the Pakistani government in a March 7th, 2022 meeting to remove Imran Khan as prime minister over his neutrality on the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which, of course, was done in response to NATO's expansion and the overthrow of Ukraine and the subsequent slaughter of thousands of ethnically Russian people in the Donbass. This, according to classified Pakistani government documents, a government document obtained by The Intercept. This is by Ryan Grimm and Murtaza Hussein, and it came out in August of last year. The meeting between the Pakistani ambassador to the United States and two State Department officials has been the subject of intense scrutiny, controversy, and speculation in Pakistan over the past year and a half, as supporters of Khan and his military and civilian opponents jockeyed for power. The political struggle escalated on August 5th when Khan was sentenced to 3 years in prison on so-called corruption charges. I put the so-called in there, and taken into custody for the second time since his ouster. Khan's defenders dismissed the charges as baseless. The sentence also blocks Khan, Pakistan's most popular politician, from contesting elections expected in Pakistan later this year. And yes, they came, and yes, a lot of people voted for him, and no, nothing happened. He is still in jail. Now, to give you an idea of Victoria Nuland's wide-ranging interests, of course, let's not forget that Anthony Blinken, who, even as the United States says that they need to provide food to the people in Israel, and they do airdrops off the coast, sometimes dropping them in the wrong places. They're still supplying the weapons to Israel to cage those people up and slaughter innocent people. That being done, of course, by none other than the president and whoever is pulling his strings, Victoria Nuland and the Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken. So let's see what Blinken had to say about her. He said, Victoria Nuland has let me know that she intends to step down in the coming weeks as Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, a role in which she has personified President Biden's commitment to put diplomacy, back at the center of our foreign policy and revitalize America's global leadership at a crucial time for our nation and the world. I know you want to see that bigger. There you go. I know it's a statement for the ages, isn't it? It's just glorious. How can you beat the truth of that? It's so truthful. I almost don't even know what to say. And coming from the Anthony Blinken mind, you know, it's got to be true. Then he said, what makes Toria? Because, you know, they're on a first name basis as they topple governments and spread weapons around the world and start up, you know, things like bioweapons plants. What makes Toria truly exceptional is the fierce passion she brings to fighting for what she believes in most: freedom, democracy, human rights. Oh man. It's absolutely bizarre world. These people are so criminal. And they just continue unabated. It's amazing. And America's enduring capacity to inspire and promote those values around the world. You know, Anthony Blinken, I think that people in Niger said it best when they gave her the finger. Awesome. Ching. And then they shut down the U.S. drone bases that you had in Niger. Remember that, Anthony? You sent Victoria and they said, go pound sand. Leave our place now. Goodbye. Yeah. Anthony continued. He said, these were the principles that drove Toria when we first met more than 30 years ago. I know. Start up the violins. Get the love cards out there. It's Valentine's Day. They are the same principles she has brought to her work as Undersecretary and as Acting Deputy Secretary of State, a role she filled seamlessly for several months. My love explodes all over the world for you, just you. My love explodes in diamonds and pearls for you. Yes, Victoria, I think he's very happy about you. But it's Toria's leadership on Ukraine that diplomats and students of foreign policy will study for years to come. Her efforts have been indispensable to confronting Putin's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, marshaling a global coalition to ensure his strategic failure. Seriously, it's just amazing. It really is like a child, and helping Ukraine work toward the day when it will be able to stand strongly on its own anthropomorphic feet, democratically, economically, and militarily. Isn't that stunning? As a quick reminder, let's go back to a little expanded portion of what we showed during the Killing Joke song of In Excelsis. Here's little Marco Rubio a couple years ago when, it was revealed, of course, in public. He seemed surprised, but this was a setup to actually try to get them off the hook, because it was going to be discovered that the bioweapons plants that then Senator Obama and Dick Lugar started up with a bunch of money from the United States in Ukraine in 2005. Then, of course, there was a time period when the Ukrainian government under Yanukovych was not closely allied with the United States, so they didn't hear much about those bioweapons plants. And then they overthrew Yanukovych when he got reelected, and all of a sudden the bioweapons plants started again. It's crazy. But, of course, they had to make sure that they ensured their lock on the government power of Ukraine. So anything that didn't go their way, they blamed on Russia. And they said it was Russian aggression, even though it was the aggression in the United States that overthrew the government of Ukraine and saw thousands of people getting slaughtered in the Donbass. You know, a little balance there on the history might be kind of nice. Here's Rubio talking about the history and how it, geez, something might be revealed here, so we better talk about it. Bioweapons labs.
Does Ukraine have chemical or biological weapons?
Ukraine has biological research facilities, which, in fact, we are now quite concerned Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of. So,
and don't forget, they're working closely with those comic book heroes, the Ukrainians.
We are working with the Ukrainians on how they can prevent any of those research materials from falling into the hands.
They're not bioweapons. Just remember, they're like pencils or books or anything. They're research materials. You can get them out of the library if you get your pass. You know what I'm saying? It's good. Good. You want some research materials?
Of Russian forces should they approach.
I'm sure.
I think one of the most ironic things there is it has the Honorable Victoria Nuland on there. That's great. And Marco comes back with the, of course, we got to get this out to the public because if bioweapons are used, then we got to make sure that we frame this correctly and that the United States wipes its hands of this. Okay, Lady Macbeth, go for it.
Aware that the Russian propaganda groups are already putting out there all kinds of information about how they've uncovered a plot by the Ukrainians to release biological weapons in the country and with NATO's coordination. If there's a biological or chemical weapon incident or attack inside of Ukraine, is there any doubt in your mind that 100% it would be the Russians that would be behind it?
There is no doubt in my mind, Senator, and it is classic Russian technique to blame on the other guy what they're planning to do themselves.
Man, you couldn't get a more bright gaslight on that one, huh? Wow. Oh, man. All right. And as you can see in the screen, and who could forget this classic hit from early 2014, after the U.S., CIA, and NATO forces toppled the elected president of Ukraine in late 2013, that being Yanukovych, the Maidan coup. We got then Obama Assistant Secretary of State Nuland and Ambassador Jeffrey Pyatt discussing the government they would implant. Let's hear from them, shall we?
I think Yats is the guy who's got the economic experience, the governing experience. He's the guy, you know, what he needs is Cleach and Tony Buk on the outside. He needs to be talking to them four times a week.
That would be Tony Buk, the leader of the Sloboda Party, the neo-Nazi. And you saw the image of him next to John McCain doing the Heil Hitler. That's the guy they're talking about, having him being one of the advisors. They already met with the Nazis and Biden shaking hands with them and McCain and all those guys. They're hanging out with Nazis. It's the new Wednesday NBC comedy classic, Hanging Out with Nazis, brought to you by Ukraine.
You know, I just think Cleach going in, he's going to be at that level working for Yatsenyuk. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. Okay. Good. Well, do you want us to try to set up a call with him as the next step?
My understanding from that call, but you tell me, was that the big three were going into their own meeting and that Yats was going to offer in that context a three-way, you know, the 3+1 conversation or 3+2 with you.
Oh, boy, those were the days, huh? Yeah, I could just see Archie Bunker and his wife singing. Those were the days. And let's not forget, everybody, let's make sure that we draw back and we dip the cup back into that wonderful, I don't know what you might call it, punch bowl of history. Remember and believe the fantasy. Democracy is freedom. Wolves love to tell that to the lone sheep as the wolves vote on what to have for dinner. So let's think about, perhaps the Prime Minister of Canada, who, as he hosted Zelensky, also brought in a former Waffen SS trooper. Classic. But he's all in favor of, got to make this a little smaller here, he's all in favor of democracy.
European dynamics, but I will say that in all of our democracies, in every democracy around the world, we are seeing a rising movements of either authoritarian populism, or
as I wrote there, authoritarian populism. This we put this on the show a couple days ago as well. This coming from the guy who shut down an entire nation, mandated experimental gene vector jabs, closed bank accounts, attacked journalists, sent police on horses to trample peaceful protesters, arrested pastors, and welcomed a member of the SS to parliament, among other wonders. There you go. Yes.
Skepticism about democracy itself.
Ah, yes. There we go. There's Hans Hermann.
And we all need to recommit ourselves to standing up, not just for Ukraine, but through standing up for Ukraine, to the very principles that make our countries strong and free. It is a time where citizens cannot take their democracies for granted.
It's classic. It's classic. All right. We've got even more, though. I mean, this is like This is like getting an extra thing of popcorn when you're at the movie theater. Like, hey, do you want an extra bag of popcorn? It's like the end of the night. You want some more? Yeah. Because this, don't forget, he used that term lean in from 2007.
Need to continue to be there, to lean in, not just on being worried about their daily challenges, which are significant everywhere around the world right now, but making sure we are building peace, stability, and prosperity for future generations as well. And that means standing up unequivocally for the international rules-based order.
Okay, if you say so, buddy. So we got a few other items. We're going to go to the Canada story just to double down on that stuff. Let's do that right now. Since we're talking about Trudeau, let's also bring up Rebel News. Yeah, don't forget, everybody, his second-in-command, Chrystia Freeland, her security dude, totally set up David Menzies of Rebel News. Menzies is suing Chrystia Freeland. Yes, way to go. The assault on David was part of a sustained violation of our civil rights as journalists. We've got mountains of evidence to prove it, and today is the day we fight back. This just out from Ezra Levant. This is...
Ms. Freeland, how come the IRGC is not a terrorist group?
He's trying to talk.
Why
to
is your government
Freeland?
Supporting Islamo-Nationalism? What?
As Chrystia Freeland walks away and all those tax-funded guys, that guy's own wallet gets picked by Chrystia Freeland. And, of course, unless, you know, she shuts down his bank account. Because then, you know, if he were at all, like, say, a supporter of the truckers, well, then, you know, you got to shut that crap down, my friends. You can't have that stuff. You know what I'm saying? Not a chance. Now, if you go over to my Sunday News Assembly over at Substack, you'll see among the stories there some major stories, such as the story about Canada, where, of course, they're one of many anti-free speech bills has been shelved for a little while. And again, this comes from Rebel News. Here it is. I said a bit farther north, the looming threat of the Canadian online harms bill has been halted for now. This would let the government claim online posts were, quote, hate speech. And then the sites hosting the posts and the people posting the comments could be punished. There's plenty more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Tired of the ever-inflating U.S. dollar? You can live your life on Dash instead with some handy websites. Bitrefill.com has been accepting Dash for years and has a ton of big-name retailers and brands, including grocers, gas stations, phone refills, Amazon, and even prepaid MasterCards. Plus, many of their gift cards are available at a discount. But what about paying your bills? Spritz.finance can do that, and they can send dollars to your bank account in case you still need those for some reason. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org.
Free Talk Live. We return with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Find us every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter /X at Gard Goldsmith, G-A-R-D Goldsmith. You can also visit my Substack, the Gardner Goldsmith Substack. And I welcome you to check out my work for mrctv.org. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. We continue our conversation about the dark background of Victoria Nuland. And then we get to welcome our great guest, the man behind the Macro Aggressions podcast, the man behind great books, including the excellent, excellent book, Octopus of Global Control. He is Charlie Robinson, and he'll join us in this segment. Thanks so much for listening. And remember, keep fighting for freedom. Now, I want to go back to the Victoria Nuland story, everybody, since we branched off into the Canadian free speech story because we saw those classic images of you-know-who. And I want to bring you just a little bit more of the fun stuff about Victoria Nuland. Oh, and don't forget, everybody, we have a lot of other people who were talking about Ukraine and how, you know, they're all so honest when they talk about Ukraine like this.
Russian military has begun a brutal assault on the people of Ukraine. Without provocation, without justification.
On Russia's unprovoked and unjustified attack on Ukraine.
The prayers of the entire world are with the people of Ukraine tonight as they suffer an unprovoked and unjustified attack.
Russia commenced its full-scale, unprovoked invasion of Ukraine.
President Putin has launched a horrific...
Oh, who's that? Ah, oh, that's Victoria Nuland. Yeah, she's just great, isn't she? She's just so honest. Yeah, talk about unprovoked attacks. Now let's get back to the woman who helped bring about that absolute disaster in Ukraine, Victoria Nuland. And this comes from the American Conservative. Nuland should have gone sooner. Helen Andrews writes, I wish I could take more pleasure in Victoria Nuland's retirement from government service, so-called, which the State Department announced today. Don't get me wrong. I take some pleasure in it. Who could not? For more than three decades, under six presidents, but notably not Donald Trump, Nuland, well, Trump didn't get us out of Syria. He sat on the oil in Syria. So don't try to indirectly praise Donald Trump there, Ms. Andrews. Nuland pushed American foreign policy in a neoconservative direction and sowed instability around the globe. But the truth is that Nuland's retirement probably does not signal much of an ideological shift at state. The primary motivation may well be sour grapes. Nuland was passed over for a promotion last year when China specialist Kurt Campbell was elevated to the number two spot under Secretary of State Antony Blinken. Nuland's friends vented to Puck reporter Julia Ioffe about how much more qualified Victoria, otherwise known as Toria, was than Campbell for a gossipy piece published under the headline Bad Blood of State. She's not going to work for Kurt, an anonymous source told Puck, predicting that Nuland would resign soon after Campbell was confirmed. Or was it just a way to allow her to leave because something bad was coming? Nuland kept working to the end. She was in Kyiv a month ago, a few days before President Zelensky sacked his top military commander, presumably either at Nuland's behest or with her approval. And of course, we all know about how involved she was in the cobbling of that government after the Maidan coup. In the 1990s, Nuland worked in the U.S. Embassy in Moscow and then as chief of staff to Strobe Talbot, the Clinton administration's point man on Russia policy. And in fact, let's take the opportunity right now to let Daniel McAdams and Ron Paul talk a little bit about this. Here we go. This is good stuff from those guys. Check it out now, as they would say, funk soul brother. Oh, we're going to get an ad, of course. Oh, but I have the volume down, so it's okay. That's cool. So I'll just bring this up and wait for the ads to roll through. I'll do the yeoman's work here. I know. Rumble. I gotta find a way to block those ads on Rumble. Okay, here we go.
If you put on that first clip, this is the AP's take on it. Victoria Nuland, third highest ranking U.S. diplomat and critic of Russia's war in Ukraine, is retiring. Now, this is out of the blue. She's had a very high profile recent couple of weeks. She was in Kyiv, and she gave a major talk at the CSIS neocon think tank in Washington, D.C. And in both of those, she said Russia should expect a few surprises coming up. She's been the biggest hawk there is. And all of a sudden, she's retiring. And some people have commented, well, she's only 62. We know as a government employee, that's a little young to retire. I don't know the details of it, but it seems like an abrupt departure, particularly for someone who's always said Russia's winning I mean, Russia's losing. Ukraine is going to win. So if Ukraine is on the verge of winning, why would she miss her chance at a victory lap? That's the big question. But before we go into maybe more of the whys, just to remind people of what Victoria Nuland's role has been. Now, we'll take a deeper dive before, but in the context of Ukraine, put on the next clip. This is what she's most famous for. So there was massive demonstrations 10 years ago, almost to the week, in Ukraine, in Kiev. The people in the streets overthrew a democratically elected and universally recognized government in Ukraine. And in the midst of the chaos and violence, here comes a senior State Department employee and the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine handing out cookies and showing signs of support, not to the government that we recognize, but to the rebels overthrowing the democratic order. And after that happened, put on this next picture. Here she is smiling and laughing with unelected.
I just want to point out there is Tjaniebach, the Nazi, right there. And that's the guy you saw in the image doing the Hitler salute during the Killing Joke song. I've shown it many times here. John McCain meeting with him, Lindsey Graham meeting with him, Amy Klobuchar meeting with him, Chris Murphy, the senator from Connecticut, on stage with John McCain and that man. There you go.
People that she helped get appointed to the coup government. So the thing is, Dr. Paul, if you can imagine if we had, okay, imagine if the January 6th riot, or whatever you want to call it, was actually an insurrection. And it really was. And these guys, instead of putting their feet on Nancy Pelosi's chair, they were really serious and had guns and they were shooting people. Now imagine if the Chinese ambassador brought some Chinese diplomats right into the middle of it and stood in the middle of the Capitol and said, keep it going, guys. We're with you. We're with you. We have some guns.
She's a loyal soldier herself.
Yeah, isn't she? She is.
But the bigger thing is figuring out to whom is she so loyal.
Yeah.
And the one thing we know is just generally speaking, people like this, they cite democracy and freedom and the Constitution.
Yeah.
And we know that it's just insanity to believe that kind of stuff.
Good job, Ron Paul. Boy, what a terrific, what a hero. He's just great. Want to close this off with great Aaron Mate and a comment from Aaron Mate about what is going and what is coming. Now, remember, not only did Ms. Nuland spend plenty of time getting groomed throughout the State Department, working for one of the biggest war hawks around in U.S. history, Strobe Talbot, but she was very close to Dick Cheney. And guess what? The guy who's coming in after her is close and has similar ties. Aaron Mate writes, Victoria Nuland's replacement as Deputy Secretary of State is John Bass, a former ambassador to Afghanistan who oversaw the U.S. withdrawal from the country. Like Nuland, he was a former aide to Dick Cheney. Really inspires confidence. Wow. And you probably heard me mention that story about my old friend who went to work for the Obama administration, who very clandestinely approached me in late 2013 when I was reporting on the Maidan coup. So we'll talk about that in a little while, my friends, as we get ready to welcome our guest on this great day of the future. And who knows? I mean, you too could hire Victoria Nuland coming up, everybody. So she's on the market. It's just awesome. And I don't mean that as if she's whoring herself out in any way whatsoever. No, it's not like the cult said, war, she's a whore. No, not at all. You know what it's time for us to do, everybody? It's time for us to let off a little bit of steam. It's time for us to go back to the studio where I worked at Star Trek Voyager and enter the field of the Federation. Yes, I know it was modeled after the United Nations, but at least it's a little fantastic, a little escapism. I get to remember my days walking through the Paramount gates and seeing all the Lamborghinis pulling in while I rode the bus, which was kind of a lot of fun. It was quite a contrast. But let's welcome our guest coming up, everybody. It's time. You know what it's time for. It's time for the Mind Meld.
I must try to mind meld with it.
Kennedy ends doctor. Our minds are one. I feel what you feel. I know what you know.
Yes, it's the Mind Meld with you-know-who, the Octopus Fighter, none other than Charlie Robinson. He's with us for the first time on this show. Charlie, how are you, man?
Well, I'm fantastic, but I feel like maybe our minds were melding because we sort of have a similar look.
I know, man. I've got the shaved head, and I'm going to put on my Charlie Robinson glasses here.
Because, we look like we're going golfing after this, maybe.
You got it. You got it, yep. Brother. You got it. There we go. There we go. We can do like dueling Charlies, you know?
Too much.
It'll be like the Spider-Man where you don't know which one's the real Spider-Man. They're all looking at each other.
Different directions. Yeah. My wife would advise against that. I think she's of the belief that one of me is plenty.
Hey man, it's great to have you here, Charlie, and welcome.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me. This will be fun.
Absolutely.
We took a good day, didn't we?
Yeah. We can celebrate and then realize that there's really no room to celebrate other than being in black markets and gray markets and giving them the finger because she's going to be replaced by another, you know, war crazy maniac. But yeah, Victoria Nuland, the Ding Dong, the witch is, well, she's not dead, but at least her career in Washington is done for a little while. Yeah, what do you have to say about it, man? I mean, you watched that crazy criminal for years, and is she just one of the most vile people in existence in the United States for years that I've seen? Just a liar, a warmonger, a bloodthirsty maniac.
Married to another liar, warmonger, bloodthirsty maniac, too. I mean, I wonder what goes on at the dinner table over there, you know, past the peas. Let's nuke, name the country that's got on the wrong side of Israel or the American Empire, and let's go overthrow it, be it Libya Syria or Ukraine or wherever. Yeah, she's a vile, disgusting monster, and
it's tough because we don't want it to reflect on, you know, we don't want it to reflect on ourselves when we come out with such visceral words, you know, such intense wordish. But you know, anyone who looks with any realistic, you know, angle towards truth can see the way that she has behaved just from the Maidan coup onwards, you know, and in so many different nations. At least, as I mentioned earlier in the show, at least the people in Niger did give her the finger and said, get out of here. We don't want you here. We're not going to let you use your drone bases. But that was right after she was involved with the overthrow of Khan in Pakistan. She was just non-stop, dude. It was like she was the arms of Dick Cheney when he was out of Washington. She was like there, you know. It was incredible.
And there's unfortunately a real market for that. There's a real need for that inside the American empire. They always need a couple people like that. Maybe you're Susan Power at USAID or you're somebody like that, that's in a position, a high powered position. It always helps if you can provide them cover by being a woman, right? Because a lot of people will just reflexively go, oh, well, she must be there because she's better at negotiating deals with people and getting, No. She's as bloodthirsty of a psychopath as her male counterparts. She's there to give you the illusion that it's the soft touch, but it's anything but. And we've seen what she's talking about behind the scenes when she thinks nobody's listening. And we've seen the carnage and the bloodbaths and the body bags that are in her wake. And I put her in the same category as somebody like a Hillary Clinton. I recognize Hillary had more power than her, but Nuland would have been a second coming of Hillary Clinton had she become Secretary of State and had taken that position, because they're ideologically aligned. They think that you know what the Middle East needs now is an iron fist, and if you don't want to get on board with us, we're going to drop democracy on you from stealth bombers or something like that.
Absolutely. So,
it's really gross, and I tell you, you can say whatever you want about Victoria Nuland, but you're never going to be able to criticize her enough. That's the truth, is that she really is a diabolical person. And like I mentioned, her husband was involved in the planning of 9/11. So you know, we've got
this
problems.
What you say, Charlie Robinson is our guest, folks. Charlie, we got macroaggressions. Tell people how they can find you on a few platforms right now, and let's repeat these things.
Sure.
But first, I just want to mention what you just said was so solid, and I want to back that up with a couple other examples. We'll talk about the 9/11 stuff. We'll reiterate that, and then I want to tell you this story. The audience here has heard it, but you probably haven't heard it. I was going to tell you this story when I had hoped to see you in Acapulco, but I'll tell you here on the show in just a minute. But let's mention where they can find you, and then we'll go back again to that solid statement about how true it is that these people, she has a slightly less offensive, superficial approach than Hillary Clinton, but the end result is just death and destruction.
Yeah.
So you've been watching this for a while. Where can people find your work?
Macroaggressions goes out as an audio podcast wherever podcasts are served, twice a week. Wednesdays are a monologue episode. Sundays are an interview. And in video format, you can find it on Rumble. You can find it on Rockfin. You can find it on band.video. And that's my Twitter page or X or whatever we want to call it these days. You can, the website is macroaggressions.io. You can just go over there and find information about the books or the podcasts or the whatever it is I'm doing.
Oh, man. And you're doing a lot, you know. There's so much to talk about. I want to show people what it looks like when they click over from the Twitter/X feed. There we go. It is the Octopus of Global Control. What a classic image. A lot of different options all up there, and people can check out everything. And I hope right now I can convince some people to get some of the merch. And the book, it's interesting, Charlie. How many years ago did you release The Octopus of Global Control, the book?
2017, August.
And I don't know if your mind works the same way as mine, but, you know, when you're in the midst of doing all that research, you had some things that brought you to it. Then you start digging in, you find out more things, you find connections. You know, people often see this happening in interviews with you, or maybe they've watched Whitney Webb and she'll go through some of these connections and stuff. Or maybe they'll watch Grand Theft World and, you know, they'll see Richard and Tony go through these things. At a certain point, you get into this research and it can become overwhelming, but you become so well versed in it that you are really one of the go-to guys here on this sort of research. And I highly recommend everybody to check out your work. You've added to it since the release of the book.
Yeah. Well, thank you. In part, I'll tell you this, this is part of the reason, this is less about me and more just a function of writing. When you write, and you know this as a writer, but when you commit something to paper, or you when I write my macroaggressions episodes, I always write them out on paper. They're not scripted, but I write the outlines out on paper. And then when you go through the process of writing books, and I've written three now, you're all over the information. You're writing it down, you're typing it, you're retyping it, you're changing this and everything. The more time you spend with it, it just kind of gets in your head, whether you want it to or not. And right. So when it comes to making connections about things, you know, that is a huge benefit to me because I've been writing for so many years. Because if you bring up a name, now I'm usually about one deviation away from connecting that to somebody else that I've written about or I know about. And sometimes they go together, like Toria Nuland and Robert Kagan, in a way where you see these marriages of two people and you go, oh my God, they're married to each other. They're diabolical monsters in and of themselves. Wait, they don't have the same last name, but they're married. And you go, Yeah, the guy that planned 9/11 is married to the lady that's regime changing Ukraine. You go, wait a second. You know, so but writing a lot makes that it puts it in your brain in a way that is more permanent than, say, just watching a video about it.
Yeah.
And I watch plenty
it becomes
of videos, don't
so easily accessible. It's conversational for you now. And then it just becomes a matter of making sure that you express it correctly. You don't info dump people. You take pauses. You make the connections. You don't forget the connections. It becomes a way that I think there are three positives to what you're saying, especially in the work itself, the general work, Charlie, that you do, that so many other really good folks do, you know. if you look at macro aggressions, and today, you know, you're on with Union of the Unwanted, and we'll get into that stuff and culture and things like that in a little bit, if it's okay with you. I'd love to talk to you about that. Yeah. Yep. But I think there are three things. One is, you know, you're working for the abstract principle yourself, for your own satisfaction, your own edification, and the principle of truth, uncovering truth, exposing the ne'er-do-wells, going after the malcontents, going after these demons that are out there, these evil people, wondering, you know, where does that demon force come from? You know, all these different types of conversations. Then you've got doing it so that you can get the information out and doing it for the immediate satisfaction of getting it to people who might be able to find it valuable. But also, as I mentioned here, I like to make sure that we can take this intellectual ammunition and hand it off to future generations, which is what you do all the time. And I don't know if you get the same sort of satisfaction. And then the final bit, Charlie, is making friends this way. Yeah. It's so cool. You know, like when I think it was Billy Ray or Tony was going to connect us and ask me to come on. And I was on with you and a couple other guys on maybe America Unplugged or something like that. Because I'd been watching your stuff for a long time. And I'm like, yeah, Charlie. Oh, man, I can't wait. This is going to be great. You know, he's the man. He's so great. Well, thank you. Yeah. So I don't know. Do you find similar satisfaction in the work itself and the abstract for those reasons? Maybe not all of them or additional ones?
Well, let me tell you how it started. It started out of a simple conversation I had with my mom back in 2016. And I was explaining to her some new conspiracy I had come across. I was very excited about it. And I was laying it out to her. And she was always very open-minded and very willing to listen. And she said, this is really interesting. It's fascinating. A documentation you've come across. She goes, I'm just curious. And she wasn't doing this to be jerky in any way. But she says, what are you going to do with all the information that you've got? Like, where are we going with this? And I didn't have an answer. I didn't ever think that I needed to do anything with it. It was just for my own personal interest. I was interested in it. I wanted to figure out how it all worked, and I would explain it to her because she was one of the few people in my world that would listen. And so I would explain it to her in a way that made that I thought I could explain it to my mom. You know, in a way that would make sense to somebody that comes from a different generation and doesn't necessarily understand all this stuff because she grew up in a world that doesn't exist anymore. And through that, she said, you should do something with this. And that wound up be getting into my head and becoming the first book. And, awesome. You know, I mean, like.
Good for your mom, man.
Yeah. Yeah, really. It is. It was a good thing that my mom did that. And I have to look back on that because. In 2007, I went on a vacation and a buddy of mine gave me a book right before I left. He said, you should read this. I think you'll like it. It's Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins. And I read this book just in the course of a couple of days and it changed my life, right? It taught me this concept of using debt as a weapon, not on a personal level, but on an international level. And it really kind of opened my eyes and it changed. Yeah. It put me on a totally different trajectory.
This international debt is a form of colonialism now for international banking and resources. We'll return with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live.
On Free Talk Live, we're bringing people to the ideas of liberty every day. From wrestling superstars like Glenn Jacobs.
You guys really are having an impact, I believe. Like I said, a lot of where I am now is due to listening to Free Talk Live. You changed my mind on some very important issues years ago.
To random people tuning in on the radio.
I was kind of stuck in the left-right paradigm. I heard your show by chance on a Saturday night. From there, I went on, joined the Free State Project and become an amplifier. So, I mean, that's really the reason why I amp is because I know that if it wasn't for you guys being on as many stations as you are, I never would have found the ideas of liberty.
You can help more people hear the message of liberty by joining Free Talk Live's AMPS program on Patreon for as little as $5 a month. And you'll get access to special perks. Visit amps.freetalklive.com, amps.freetalklive.com.
Free Talk Live.
We're back on Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Find us every Monday through Friday, at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter / X. That's at Guard Goldsmith. Continuing our conversation with the great and really upbeat Charlie Robinson of the Macro Aggressions podcast. Check him out, everybody. Allocation, things like that.
And then I look back on a couple days. Friday. And I've got John Perkins on my show for the second time. And I'm able to talk to him about this in greater detail. So to me, part of the benefit has been that I now have an excuse, a reason, a justification to reach out to these people and strong arm them into having a conversation with me.
Yeah.
About it.
Yeah.
You know
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah. So I know I'm that like, feeling. I felt
John
yes.
Perkins about this. And John, yep. Goes, fine, I'll talk to you about it. Holy. Wow. Okay.
I remember the first time you had him on, John on, and I was like, this is great. This is so good. And you even mentioned how he was, you know, so integral in your development. I felt that way. The first time I got James Bovard on my show and Mary Ruart, similar sort of thing, Tom DiLorenzo, those kinds of people, you know, I was like,
you go, well, it's just little old me talking about, you know, whatever. And now I've got the guy on who changed my life. And so in the last month, I've John Perkins is back, which, you know, is a treat for me. You go to Narcapulco and I get to, now mind you, flat get in the DeLorean and go back in time 5 years to Narcapulco 2019, and I'm sitting front row for David Icke, who's on the screen.
There he is, right there. He wasn't giving you the finger though.
No, he wasn't. I watched for 4 hours in an Narcapulco as he sweat through the back of his shirt. You know, he was going back and forth and back and forth on the stage, and we were indoors in an enclosed place. So that's 2019. 2024, I'm now on the stage at an Narcapulco hosting and emceeing the event. Behind me on the big screen that is takes up the entire back of the stage, like a movie theater screen, is David Icke. And I'm doing a virtual interview with him in front of a live audience of 600 people for all anarchists. Every seat's taken. It's spilling out into the sides, into the back. They've got a 300. Oh, there we go. We've got a 360 degree camera in the middle as well. That's spinning around and they're showing David. So he's getting kicked out of it.
Oh, that's great.
And I've got a David Icke shirt on that's with the IKEA logo, but it just says Icke. And we're talking about him sweating through
it's
his
classic.
Shirt. And he's going, yeah, I remember it was hot out there. I'm like, you're telling me, David, you know, like, oh, I'm out there in the sun, like cooking. So, you know, I mean, I look at all of this stuff now in retrospect and I go, that conversation with my mom started me down a path in which all of these things wound up happening. And to bring it back to David Icke, David talks about the totalitarian tiptoe. Right.
Oh, I love that.
And he says,
yeah.
You know, you don't have to know if you're these bloodthirsty maniacs, you don't have to go from A to Z all at once. You go from A to B. And then when you get to B, you go from B to C and C to D. Right. Well, that actually applies to your life in general, right? Yeah. I don't know how I'm going to get. I mean, if in 2016, after that conversation with my mom, somebody pulled me aside and said, oh, by the way, in 2024, you'll be on the stage introducing David Icke and doing a live interview with him. I would have no understanding of what that path would look like to get there. I would have, in fact, it would throw me off if somebody had told me that would actually happen. I think I would have probably been trying too hard or whatever. You almost can't know your destiny or else it'll screw up the journey.
Yeah.
We're probably getting into some Star Trek stuff here with that. But but the idea that you're going to bring this information forward in a way that is relatable and digestible and logical.
Right.
That I got from David Icke.
So right.
He can lay it out in a way that makes sense. And I remember at that 2019 presentation, I had a guy with me a friend that I'd run into there who was in the alternative media, but he wasn't really familiar with David Icke's stuff. He goes, I know a little bit about him, but as a Jewish guy, I just keep hearing he's anti-Semitic. And I go, oh, well, I said, well, then I said, then you really need to watch his presentation, I think, because I've seen plenty of them online. This will be the first time I see him live, but watch it and then let's see what you think. And so he watched it and I saw him. I wound up going out to dinner with this guy later that night. And I said, so what'd you think of David Icke? He goes, he was fantastic. I said, did you, as a Jewish guy, did you feel like he was anti-Semitic? He goes, no, he didn't even mention any of that stuff. I said, he just laid out a very logical, reasonable, kind of scary, but a presentation that was anchored in reality. He said, I thought he was fantastic. I really thought he was great. And so again, I think that some of these concepts are dark and terrifying, and you try to walk that line between like talking about them, not making sure they're not off limits and giving them the sort of the attention that they deserve, but not making it so scary that everyone throws their hands up and goes, oh, it's hopeless, you know,
right.
What we're doing, or that, you know, it puts them in a dark frame of mind. I don't want that. So that is sort of, that's something I've had to be mindful of throughout the books or the podcast or whatever. It's like, you know, we're dealing with really heavy duty topics.
Yeah.
And if you catch somebody on the wrong day, it might feel like it's just like the straw that broke the camel's back and it's too much for them to handle. And they don't want to hear it. So if you can find, if there's a way to lighten it up a little bit,
to the extent
that you can, without being disrespectful, of course, to the people that are actually suffering from these policies or whatever. But if you can find a way to kind of make them, you know, laugh at the absurdity of it all, I think it gives people the ability to hang in there a little longer with the information and process it in a way when they go, okay, well, I see what they're doing here. It's not the end of the world. I always try to remind the audience, like, these people make a lot of mistakes too. They're not, they think they're gods. They're not gods. They're psychopathic and they have an inflated sense of self and they think that they can do whatever they want to do. But if you think about it, they make a lot of mistakes. So don't be so quick to say, oh, it's all over. Klaus Schwab, you know, they all said they're going to make us eat the bugs and live in pods. So we might as well just get on board. Let's start eating. Let's get used to eating the bugs now and get some practice living in the pot. No. If they have a 10-step plan to tyranny, but they can't get off step three because they're having problems with it, then who cares how many steps they have? You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
I want to make sure that we all feel that we never feel like we're overmatched and that we never give up and we never feel hopeless or anything. That is that we don't definitely don't need.
Yeah, right, because
what we're up against, but not intimidation.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. To me, I'm always pretty enthusiastic about the battle. You know, to me, there's nobility in the struggle and you're only here for a certain amount of time. I'm in the mosh pit and I'm just going to go. You know, if I've got the energy, I'm going to do it. And you're right, though, for some people, they might feel it's very formidable or, you know, very difficult. They might have had other circumstances in their lives where something very bad happened and it might be very bleak. But I think you make a great point, Charlie, in that, you know, hubris is not a clean energy. Hubris tends to bring about a lot of mistakes for the people who are hubristic. And I love your approach, David's approach. You know, it's really cool, too, because you feel a bonding for people who are outside it. If they can hear what you have to say and they get a positive vibe about it, you know, you're on with other guests, you're part of this group, you are opening the circle even wider. I remember when David appeared at Trafalgar Square to battle the lockdowns in England, he wasn't even supposed to get off the island where, he and his family lived. He'd been shut out. They weren't going to allow him back on the mainland of England, of the Big Island. And he found his way in and people were like, whoa, David Icke is here. Dude, that's amazing. He was like banned. How did he even get here? You know? And so it's that sort of energy and, you know, you can combine it with a certain amount of contempt, obviously for the bad guys. And that gets people energized, but there is some wonderful stuff. And especially when you look at an Arcopolco, because it's a beautiful setting and there are a lot of other positive people there and you have a lot of alternatives on ways to, you know, try to skirt around these things. And we'll have to talk about if there are a couple things that you know, you want to discuss towards the end about that on the positive side. That'd be great. So, so Charlie, let me ask you, to give the audience a couple pieces of that intellectual ammunition to carry with them. Let's go back to the Victoria Nuland breaking news story as our first story. So we got Nuland, and of course we got Kagan, her husband. And so give people a couple nuggets about Kagan when you mentioned 9/11 that they might want to take with them and where they might want to look for more information about that.
Yeah. So he's part of this group called PNAC, Project for a New American Century. That is a think tank, doesn't exist anymore. They folded it back in the late 2000s and reopened it as America Enterprise Institute. It's basically the same thing. And Project for a New American Century wrote an article in September of 2000 called Rebuilding America's Defenses. And it talked about how it would be really great for America to establish itself, reestablish itself in the wake of the Soviet Union collapsing a decade earlier, and that we really need to take it to the Middle East and establish ourselves. But the problem is, Guard, that absent some catastrophic or catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor, we're going to be unable to do that. Right. We're just not going to ever have the support for that. But if we were to have some new Pearl Harbor, then that might be the pretext that we use to launch into this new American century. But
the font of the PNAC wisdom.
And so, you know, you write this paper and you put it out there and you just say, if only we had this. Right.
Right.
Well, when you start to, well, I mean, then a year later, almost exactly, we get 9/11. And boy, you know, if I didn't know any better, I would say that is the catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. And of course it was. And when you dig into, and of course, Robert Kagan was one of the co-founders of Project for a New American Century. Right. And it had all the swamp monsters in there, like the John Boltons and Dick Cheney's and Elliot Abrams and all these. There's a common denominator running through all of them. They're all hardcore Zionists. And again, Zionism, for people that kind of conflate that, they go, are you talking about the Jewish people again? Maybe, maybe not. But it's a political designation. And you can find videos of Joe Biden saying, you don't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist. I'm a proud Zionist, right. Been a Zionist for, you know.
Exactly. It's such a form of warped statism that we often see in so many cases. But in this case, using the shield of anti-Semitism to gaslight people to say, as we establish our state in Palestine, which they've been planning since the 1860s and even before that, actually, various people, including the Rothschilds, got involved in the early 1900s and so on. But this had been a plan to establish this Zionist state of not necessarily Semitic Jews. These would be Ashkenazi Jews who came down from Europe and weren't even Semitic by heritage, which is fascinating, over the Semitic peoples of Palestine. And, you know, with all sorts of excuses that, oh, the desert is empty and we're taking it. No, people live there. That's what you did. You took their freaking land, you know, and it's that sort of mindset that, of course, now. And I'll tell you, Charlie, I went to Boston University. My last name is Goldsmith. A lot of the kids there, it's 85% to 90% Jewish. They are big time Zionist Jews there. Big time. And so I would hear things because they thought my name was Goldsmith being Jewish. It's not Jewish. It's English and Irish, right? So I'm wearing my orange right now for half of it, I guess, right? I always say on Easter, on St. Patrick's Day, I get in front of a mirror and I yell at myself. I'm half English, half Irish. I yell at myself for my own oppression and radicalism. But I would hear stuff about the Palestinians that was shocking. I mean, they didn't even consider them human. Because they stood in the way of the expansion of the Zionist state.
Yeah.
It was nuts. Anything was excusable, dude. Lies, spying, everything was excusable. I just sat there. I was like, I can't even believe it. And now, you know, I've seen it manifested over the years. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
And it's not limited to, you know, you don't have to, as Biden says, you don't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist. But it is a mentality. And it's a state of mind where you say, we're going to establish this. this state and we're going to control it, and it's going to be the forward operating base of the United States Empire. And on top of that, really at its core, what they seek to do is have America fight its battles for them. Mm-hmm. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? If you can get the bully to beat up your enemy, then you don't even have to get in the fight, right?
That's an interesting fake symbiotic relationship where they sell that to the pro-American security, anti-communist people who've already been sold a massive canard and say, we'll be your forward guys in the Middle East to protect against the communist expansion. In the meantime, they're using America to funnel them weapons to expand the Zionist state.
Right. And they consider Israel to be an American aircraft carrier in the Middle East. Yeah. Right. So that's their place. So this group that wrote Rebuilding America's Defenses are loyal to Israel at their core. Yeah. But of course, they said Rebuilding America's Defenses. Now, they're in the White House. They're Bush guys. They're all in the White House. So, so they appear to be Americans, but their loyalties are elsewhere. And when you dig into what actually happened in 9/11, it's not 19 Arab hijackers with box cutters that did this. It was both an inside and outside job in conjunction with components of the American security state, including the Bush White House and a lot of the people inside of there. There were a lot of Zionists from Israel that were involved in it. The Saudis knew about it. The group that had nothing to do with it were the people in Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria and Libya. They had nothing to do with 9/11. I mean, but I didn't know that. I didn't know that until 2003. So you spend a couple years believing the hype and not really connecting the dots. And for me, Gard, it wasn't until they started to try and sell the Iraq war. And they're like, Saddam Hussein and, 9/11. I was like, what? What does that have to do with anything? They're like, Yellow Creek cake uranium. And we found aluminum tubes. And I was like, aluminum tubes? Okay. I mean, I don't. So you hear this, and to me, I start thinking, I don't think this is what it's really about. Right. I think that the Iraq 2.0 is W. Bush is trying to pick up where his daddy left off. You know what I mean? Right. And in my mind, I'm thinking it's more that than it is the other thing. But no matter how you get to this point, no matter what it is, whether it's 9/11 or it's the Iraq war or COVID or whatnot, you get to one of these topics that doesn't compute and you go, this doesn't make sense. It sounds like nonsense. I feel like they're lying and manipulating me. They want me to feel a certain way. This is clearly a lie. You might not even know all the ins and outs of it. You just know it's a lie based on how they're selling it. And then you ask the follow-up question that everybody asks. If this is a lie, what else is a lie?
Exactly. And those people who were involved in cobbling together and then promulgating that lie, whether it be Kagan or Cheney or Wolfowitz or any of these other people, and then their media flax, any of those people, you start to see the connections to later events like Ukraine in late 2013 in the Maidan coup. And let me tell you a quick story, please. Charlie. So I've mentioned this to a couple people, and it's really weird the way, as I went out to Hollywood and worked on a couple TV shows out there, but I had these connections to journalism stuff. I did this journalism internship in Washington, D.C. Curiously enough, just to let you know, one of the reporters who exposed the fact that the CIA had been spying on Julian Assange, he's my old roommate from college, Sean Naylor. And And it was like, and he and I actually roomed together when we did our journalism internship after college. We were college roommates for 2 years, and then we roomed together in Washington, D.C. on our journalism internship. So it's like I can't get away, from the political stuff. Like I came back to New Hampshire so I could be closer to my family and started writing prose fiction rather than script writing. And I think it was a much better choice. And everything has led me here to, meeting David Knight, getting in touch with you, meeting Tony Arterburn, all these good people in the audience here, So, and, you know, interviewing James Bovard and all the people that I admire so much. But one of the other things that I just couldn't escape was one of my buddies from teenage years went to work for the Obama administration. And the audience has heard about this. I talked about it last week without any knowledge about, you know, Victoria Nuland or anything. I was just talking about Ukraine. And I said, look, we went out to dinner. It was December of 2013. So little backtrack for you. Mm-hmm. In 2012, 2011, I think it was, might have even been 2010. I was out in L.A. and I was having dinner with my friend Glenn, Glenn Jacobs, who, you know, played Kane in the WWE. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we're at a restaurant somewhere near like Redondo Beach or whatever. And it was a Middle Eastern restaurant. And the guy knew Glenn, and Glenn's fairly easy to spot because he's almost 7 feet tall and 300 pounds. He's a giant, you know. And so he comes over, the guy who manages the restaurant at the end of the night. He comes over and he starts talking to us. And he comes from somewhere in the Middle East, like Turkey or something. And so we're talking to him. He says, you know, they're going to try to overthrow Assad. And I said, well, what are you talking about? He goes, look, Assad's not a great guy. He goes, but they want to stop Russian energy exports through Syria, through this pipeline that they're trying to build. And, you know, they're going to go after him. And then, of course, we saw what happened with Libya as well as, you know, yeah. Gaddafi was going to form the gold-based currency. So anyway, so he says, yeah, I just want to let you know that. That tipped me off to something that a friend of mine in the military had told me, that the United States was planning on trying to get their own pipeline through Syria. And I was like, yes. Oh, man, that matches up. And I was like, yeah. So I started to watch. And as, of course, in 2009, the Russians started to decouple from long-term debt instruments for the United States. I saw how they started to portray the Russians as bad. The Russians started to orient themselves more towards China, Brazil. The BRICS was starting to formulate a little bit. Gold-based things, the ruble backing by gold, a lot mm-hmm. of rumors about that. And sure enough, all of a sudden, we see this happen in 2011, 2012, they start to go after Assad. The spurious stories about him using chemical weapons on his own people. Students at MIT debunked that, for God's sake. We'll return with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live and our conversation with Charlie Robinson. Thanks for listening.
Eleutheromania, the insatiable desire for freedom. It's the new three-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Talk Live. We're back on Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Find us every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter /X. That's at Garth Goldsmith. Continuing our conversation with the great and really upbeat Charlie Robinson of the Macro Aggressions podcast. Check him out, everybody. It was ridiculous, right? Yeah. So, you know, it was. So then you see what happens in December 2013. So I'm at dinner. I was doing a podcast and I was explaining to people, I was like, this is utterly bogus. That coup, that Maidan thing, that was mm-hmm. a false flag. The government didn't mm-hmm. fire on those people. These are Soros is spending a bunch of money. NATO is involved with this. They've expanded way into the former Iron Curtain nations, contrary to what James Baker said in the 90s. I was like, this is completely antagonistic, what they're doing here in the United States plan. And I was like, they're setting something up because they want to decouple the Russians from the Ukrainians. They just made a really good deal with Yanukovych in December of 2013 for a swap and energy to come through and continue to go through Crimea. So I said, you know, it's ethnically. So this guy that I knew as a teenager, he had worked for Eric Holder in the Justice Department for a super short period of time. And then he left because
that's the only period of time you want to work for Eric Holder.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, can I have that time back? No. All right. At least it was short, you know? So, so the next thing, sort of like a conversation with Robert Reich, I guess. Right. You know, but, and no, I don't mean his physicality audience. I don't mean
very short.
Yeah. I didn't even think of that when I thought of using him as an example. So anyway, so he comes up to me. And he had left just prior to the break on the break of the information on Fast and Furious. So he must have known what was going on. And he was like, I'm getting out of here. So, So he comes up to me, takes me by the arm. He goes, Gart, come over here. I say, what? He goes, hey, man, I've been listening to your stuff on Ukraine. Now, this is December 2013.
Okay.
He says, where are you getting your information? I was like, well, you know, I'm just getting in here and there and, you know, this sort of stuff. And he goes, well, you're right. And there's a lot more. And so I said, really? Like what? Now, and I've mentioned this on the show before, Charlie. I don't know whether he was playing up the drama or not. Yeah. You know, I don't think he was in any risk or anything like that. But he goes, well, yeah, you know, I think I'll stop there. I've got a daughter now. I'm like, oh, okay.
You can't leave me like that. Now you got now you got to give it to me.
Yeah, exactly. I felt like, you know, Tom Petty, don't do me like that. But it was, you know, so I just left it at that and I just kept digging and watching and stuff like that. And you know, just the way that they used the Russian canard on the DNC leak, not a hack. It was a leak. It was clearly Seth Rich. Everybody knows this stuff. The way they tried to use Russia as the boogeyman for everything, including the Portman Murphy 2016 so-called countering foreign propaganda bill that then fed money to NewsGuard, which then came back and censored me at MRC TV. This stuff just keeps coming back. It's like Al Pacino. I keep trying to leave. They keep pulling me back in, you know, it's nuts. Anyway, that's my little story because it's weird when you work in this field. Sometimes you say to yourself, well, look, this stuff would just happen. You know, you're in here long enough. You're going to meet enough people. They're going to give you information. But there seems to be something else going on that says, no, dude, you're in the right place. You're doing the right thing. I don't know. I don't want to make it too messianic or whatever, but there does seem to be a vibe. Like talking to you now is so good. It's so satisfying. And people get this information. Again, let's mention the websites. Go for it.
Macroaggressions.
And Rockfin. Go ahead.
Macroaggressions.io is the website to go to. You can follow me on Twitter at macroaggression. Also, since you mentioned it, Redondo Beach. 10 years. Yeah. I lived there 10 years in Redondo
No
Beach.
Way. Are you serious?
Yeah. And Kane, your buddy Kane, who is now the mayor of Knoxville.
Yeah.
His wife is my business partner's real estate agent, Tony Merkel. They lived in Knoxville. So he's been out with them as well to dinner. But when you're telling me these stories, I'm going, Redondo? Yes.
Are you serious? That's where Merkel Media comes from?
Knoxville, yeah.
Holy smoke.
Yeah,
wow, that's wild.
To buy his house. He used Kane's wife as his
He had a house here in New Hampshire and we met at one of the Free State Project gatherings. It wasn't Pork Fest, although we'll talk about that. It was it's called Liberty Forum. And they have that in the winter. And people kept coming up to me and they're like, you know, Kane wants to meet you. And I hadn't followed wrestling for a long time, you know? And I was like, Kane, who? And then, you know, Kane, I'm like, Kane, who? Like, I don't know a guy named Kane. What are you talking about? Like, no, the wrestler. And I'm like, what? The guy with the mask. I'm like, what? And then, so I was out in the corridor, in the, you know, like the main hallway and, you know, being 6'4", I can pretty much see over everybody's head. And so I looked over this mass of people who were in the hallway because it was super crowded. And I saw one other head, like a buoy on an ocean coming towards me. And it was Glenn and he shook my hand and I thought it was going to break. I was like, whoa, man.
That's funny.
Yeah. It was pretty wild. Man.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was going to say over at Rockfin, Angus Mustang is there. Angus, thanks, man. Angus says two great personalities working together. Very cool. Very cool. And in fact, he posted it a few times and he goes, sorry, chat gone wild.
That's all right. Hey, if you're on Rockfin, if you're watching this on Rockfin, I'm on Rockfin as well. When you get done watching this, like follow, subscribe, whatever it is you do for my show.
Yeah.
Do it. It's in Free Thought Media. So for those that
that's good stuff, man. Good stuff.
Rockfin's been good to us.
Yeah. Oh, Rockfin has been good. They're good guys. They're good guys. Let's see. Oh, yeah. And I want to mention, Risha M mentioned this earlier. NATO is wargaming in Poland. Jeez.
That one. Great. Yeah. Wonderful. Just what we need. Yeah. Is it Poland? Poor Poland. You know, I mean, their geography sucks for them to be right in the middle of Russia and Germany. And, you know, they're getting it on this direction and World War II getting on the other direction of World War II. So you feel bad for them. But, I think NATO is at the end of its useful existence. I think that when you've got something like the BRICS and the BRICS Plus that's coming into existence nowadays, I think they'll be the justification to keep NATO, like, oh, well, we have to have it now because we've got this other group that's, you know, like the equivalent of the Warsaw Pact, but part two, you know, BRICS. But I see this threat. I see NATO being run so poorly. And of course, you know, I mean, for those that don't know the history of NATO, NATO ran something called Operation Gladio, which was a leave behind domestic terrorist organization. So like the idea that NATO's the good guys, you just understand they train their people to on how to, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, how to blow up buildings and blow
innocent
up train
people,
tracks
innocent
and,
people. Yeah. To conduct more terrorism,
supermarkets and things like that. I mean, they were the ones that were creating all the domestic terrorism and then using that as the justification to then get certain politicians out of office because it was happening under their watch. So I think people need to recalibrate the way they view some of these globalist organizations. You hear like the United Nations. I mean, I know your audience is educated on this. My audience is educated on this, but the general public, like the people that you run into at Thanksgiving dinner, you know, and things like that, they think the United Nations is a force for good. They don't know any better. They don't know that they're uniting nations into a world government. You know, I mean, eventually into a world government. That's what they want to do. And so in the relationship, you go, oh, well, we got to support NATO. Why? Why do we have to support NATO? NATO should have gone away 40 years ago.
Right, right.
We don't need it. It's obsolete. It's going to get us into World War III. And then you have to ask the question, is that what they want? Right. We've got an impending financial catastrophe coming. Everybody knows it's undeniable. We've got an uncertain presidential election at the end of the year, but we're not the only country. Plenty of other countries have elections this year as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wouldn't be the worst time for a big, gigantic distraction, right?
Yep.
So you have to, so like we're all good, decent people that don't want war, right? So we're trying to figure out how you avoid it. And you watch the behavior of these people, Nuland as a prime example. And you can't help but come away from it feeling like they want World War III. They're not trying to avoid it. They're trying to provoke it. So who are these people and why do we allow them to be in positions of power? Why have we become so docile and so accepting and so like, because we all know Nuland's going to go away and she's going to get replaced by somebody who's just as big of a monster, but we just don't know it yet. Right. I mean, it's just kind of the way it works. So why, you know, we accept this. It's so weird that we've over the years, we've just been kind of like convinced that it's just the way it works. Well, I just don't know that we need to believe that. I feel like we can make it work differently. You do a lot of work with the Free State people in New Hampshire and that project is amazing.
Yeah.
And they're coming at problems from a different angle. We talked about Anarchapulco. They are as well. So this idea that government has to solve problems that government creates, let's get out of that way of thinking. Let's do it differently.
You know, it's interesting, Charlie, because, you know, they can do things overtly and, you know, play up their different favorite welfare, whether it's, you know, they're trying to make themselves look good by claiming that they care about migrants when really it's about getting votes and more welfare recipients, that sort of thing for the vast majority of these politicians on the Democrat side. Some of the Republicans are worried about crime and things like that. but it would be good if they would be more consistent speaking out against welfareism. Don't say, well, this is only for Americans. No, welfare that government institutes through taking from somebody is at the predicate immoral, baseline, period. Don't even start from there. And so all these types of things, if we can get this information out, just getting out the moral argument is good. And then you've got the history on it. I want to show the section of your website that shows the book Octopus of Global Control, the image on the book. And as you say, the octopus is real. The Octopus of Global Control is a controversial nonfiction book that uncovers some of the biggest conspiracies in modern world history in a way that is both horrifying and hilarious. The book features quotes from over 500 people that had a front row seat to some of the most important events in history. So right now, I want to take this opportunity, Charlie, while you're on, to say this is one of the best books that anybody could ever get. I'll never forget. Yo, absolutely. So I hope that a few of the viewers or listeners, either live right now, go over to the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com, or they, after the fact, they'll check it out and get the book. But Charlie, let me ask you, you know, if we see what's going on in Ukraine, I think the writing on the wall there was on the wall at the start. And I think their plan is to have a partition of Ukraine. This is the plan of the NATO, the deep state people, the people who want to continue getting more money to their friends at Lockheed Martin and then have them give that money to Nikki Haley and so on and so forth. I think very clearly they have every intent to see NATO sue for peace and then have 2/3 of it taken or 1/3 of it, half of it taken by Russia. The ethnically Russian areas go back to Russia as they have already voted, and then basically create a new Cold War there in Ukraine. And then we've got the Israeli-Gaza situation, which I think has turned on some of these people in a way that they didn't exactly expect. They might have had a little bit too much hubris. Can you tell us what you see as far as the Ukraine endgame here and some of the situation that Victoria Nuland and Jeffrey Pyatt helped bring about, the doublespeak of people like the Prime Minister of Canada after hosting the Waffen SS trooper there, talking about democracy after they overthrew the government in Ukraine, after they had supposedly shown democracy, the hypocrisy of Joe Biden regarding the Middle East as well, as they say, well, we've got to get food to these refugees, but of course, we're going to continue giving weapons to the Israelis so they can slaughter them. Either one of those, what do you see as the end games on these types of things, Charlie?
Well, since you mentioned the word Joe Biden and hypocrisy, I have to mention that my third book is called Hypocrisy, Surviving in a World of Cultural Double Standards, where I point out these rather obvious double standards that we have, like gun control in America. We got to take these weapons of war off the streets, but we need $100 billion for Ukraine for guns for them. And you're just like, What are you talking about? This is silly. I think ultimately, you know, Ukraine, I wish Congress cared as much about America as they cared about Ukraine. They all seem extremely concerned with the well-being of Ukraine, which is funny to me because they don't give a damn about most of the other places, but they're very particular about Ukraine. And I think that is in part because it's the world's dirtiest money laundromat.
Absolutely.
It's a place where money goes in. It's a coin mixer.
Yeah.
Put it in crypto terms. Yeah. It's a coin mixer. You put the money in, it comes out in a different form. And maybe it comes out, I mean, and we'll tie it maybe directly to crypto and FTX and what they were doing there. We've got biolabs going on. What's going on there?
Right,
we've got,
right.
You know, the Russians are pointing this out. We've got a live laboratory for testing the military and information terror complex. That's Berwick and I renamed them that after, instead of the military industrial complex, we felt like needed a new upgraded name. So we came up with the military information terror complex. And that is because one of the components of this is the terrorism industry. It's a huge moneymaker, and NATO's part of that.
Yeah.
And Ukraine is a laboratory for that. And so the people there are utterly disposable as far as the American empire is concerned. So let's just make sure that is, you know, when America talks about taking care, you know, and protecting democracy and standing up, that is all nonsense. They quite literally do the opposite of that. They want that piece of land because it's very controllable. You know, I'm starting to get the feeling. You mentioned the Israel thing. I'm starting to get the feeling that the Ukraine land and the Israel situation are two very tied together pieces that seem to go well. I think that the Israelis are losing the PR battle on this situation there. Yeah. I mean, they're obviously winning the war.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that in the end, they're not going to care about the PR battle. If they can get the land, they're not going to care about the PR battle. The ends are going to justify their means for them.
That's the problem is that you can tell that the behaviors that the ends justify the means, but they're
hell bent for leather. They're just going to go for it.
And they're winning.
Yeah.
But in Ukraine, the Ukrainians, they're losing and this is undeniable. And so it feels very desperate there. I don't know what this is going to mean with Victoria Nuland out there. I don't know if that's a concession that this is kind of lost. I don't know if they retired her to sort of pin it on her, which would be hilarious.
Right.
I mean, they should pin it. She should be serving. She should be taken out in handcuffs, of course,
absolutely,
for her crimes against humanity. But at the very least, she's going to get humiliated because the press release I read talked about her retirement. And it wasn't like, oh, she's no longer in this post. It was like, no, she's retiring, as in sitting on a rocking chair and not working for the government anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know if she can do that.
And I got to say, alarm bells were going off for me, not for my concern for the lovely, wonderful Victoria Nuland. But I thought to myself, there's something going on. There's something going on behind the scenes there where they want her out. And, her friend said that she would, if she didn't get that position permanently, she couldn't stay under a different person. Come on. Seriously? Honestly, no. I wonder if you're really her friend or if there is a narrative that's going on, as you say, if they're going to be pinning it on Victoria Nuland, and certainly they could pin it on her and a heck of a lot of other people. I'm very curious to see what happens there. And also, because she probably has so much information on other people, whether or not she can protect herself, you know?
She'll go to work for Aspen Institute or CFR or World Economic Forum or one of these places, Brookings, she'll be a consultant. She'll make a nice living. She'll never see the inside of a jail cell.
Yeah.
That's how it works with them. But you know, of course, like back to our previous conversation about Robert Kagan, her husband. I mean, you have to sort of understand that these are two people that are ideologically aligned,
and
they are fighting for something for the state of Israel. And so that's again part of the reason why I have some questions about the geography of Ukraine and its ties to Israel and the hardcore Jewish population that exists there, and how there's always been a reciprocal relationship between those two countries, and Zelensky's Jewish, and there's always been this tight relationship, and Netanyahu's wanting to do something, and I just get a really bad feeling when I see the American Empire involved in all of these things. And let's not kid ourselves. The American Empire is definitely involved with the Israel Gaza Hamas situation as well. I mean, to the extent that they would like to pretend like they're not, so as not to appear as even more aggressive than they already are. They are most definitely a contributor in the fact that they've given lots of money and logistics and all kinds of weapons, not to mention all the stuff that Israel has stolen from the U.S. military over the years, all the secrets and programs and this and that and stuff, you know.
Can you imagine if that had been Iranian agents? They would have been bombing that place instantly, right?
Smithereens, they would
absolutely
have bombed.
Absolutely. But Nikki Haley would not have been able to speak. Yeah. Well, sorry, what was that, Charlie?
Well, it's when because it's our ally in the Middle East, we're supposed to overlook all this stuff.
Right, absolutely.
Like this stuff isn't going on, because it would be embarrassing if our best friend was backstabbing us. Well, this is a situation where America's at a very precarious place, you know, where you're teetering on insolvency from a banking standpoint. You've got multiple foreign wars that you're entangled in, and your currency isn't what it used to be. And this petrodollar arrangement is going away. America is as vulnerable as it's been in the last 100 years, maybe.
Now, right, do you think, as Tony says, you know, it's a controlled demolition of the American dollar, the American economy, so that they can bring about CBDC and try to get to this global domination, and of course, continue to play favorites in various nation states on the military front, so that they can have their cronies get a lot of land and get a lot of special favors and things. You look at, you know, people are like, oh, America's still in Syria. We're like, yeah, America's the number one mafia in Syria. What do you think is going on in Syria? Give me a friggin' break. What do you think Donald Trump was doing down there? Come on. You know, he wasn't all innocent either. Come on.
No. And in a brief moment of honesty, he said, yes, we're stealing the oil.
We're sitting on the oil. We're taking the oil. It's the best oil. It's really good oil. I'm going to use it in my hair. We're taking the oil. It's our oil.
I mean, there's part of you that goes, well, hey, at least he's being honest about being a criminal.
Yeah. But, yeah, you know, true. But, true.
I think.
Well, it's like you said, it's like you said, Charlie, they can't control everything. But and so I want to sort of jump into this, because clearly they have had a direction. They've had the plans. They've set out the plans. You have spoken to people. I have spoken to people who told us we're on the right track as we watch these things. And sometime later, I'd like to talk to you about the potential Israeli connections to 9/11, the stories that we were told about bin Laden and 9/11. And I'll give you another example. My friend Sean Naylor, the guy who was one of the reporters who exposed the CIA spying on Assange in the Ecuadorian embassy. In addition to doing that, he, in our junior summer, a year before senior year in college, he actually got connected through CIA connections at Boston University to go into Pakistan and then get into Afghanistan to meet with the Mujahideen. He met with the Northern Alliance there. And and it was, you know, he might have been walking around the same camps that bin Laden was in, but he met with the guy that, you know, like got killed just before 9/11. I don't know who the guy
Shah
was.
Massoud.
Yes, that's who we met. Yes, that's who we met. Yeah. And, you know,
well-respected guy in the region.
Yeah.
He's a guy that would have put a stop to a lot of stuff, and they blew him up on September 10th.
We'll return with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live, continuing our conversation with Charlie Robinson.
Free Talk Live.
We're back on Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Find us every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter/X. That's at Guard Goldsmith. Continuing our conversation with the great and really upbeat Charlie Robinson of the Macro Aggressions podcast. Check him out, everybody. Yes, that's it. That's the guy. That's the guy he met. And you know, it's very interesting to see. And he was just, you know, going into his senior year in college. But so they try these things. You know, they had their connections with these guys. They try to take out the liabilities and stuff. But let's switch over. Very good opportunity here, Charlie, to just talk and suggest that people go to your feed, check out one of your latest posts, because you were on with the Union of the Unwanted today, and you guys had a really cool conversation. I just found it so great. I was eating my lunch listening to you guys. It was great, you know, and I just was like, man, I wish I was in a pub with these guys having a sandwich. It was just so much fun. But it was also very substantive. And, you know, coming from my script writing background, a lot of people have accused, not a lot, but I've occasionally been accused of putting something in a story that, you know, maybe I got fed from somebody, or, you know, it's some, what's the term they use for that? Predictive programming, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm just a guy working on stories, and I'm so a long time ago, about 7 years before the so-called pandemic, I wrote a story called Whitechapel, and it was about a pandemic. It was in a collection. It was in an anthology called Chiral Mad 2. And I've actually read the story here. It's about a nurse who's in the Whitechapel region of London, somewhere in the future, and they're working with some weird thing they call the phenomenon. And the phenomenon is like it's some outbreak. And so they have this whole thing where you can't go out. Shops are closed down. You have to have 6 foot distancing. I actually put it in the story. yeah, it was wild, dude. It was crazy. I'm like, what? But, you know, I was just extrapolating and imagining, which is what we would do, you know, at Star Trek or Outer Limits or whatever. Yeah. So so people are like, how did you know that that was going to happen? I'm like, you know, I was just thinking, like, what would the government do? You know, and I had false flags in there to stir up fear and stuff. And so you all were talking about some really cool stuff today, because I think it's a really good lesson to show when we talk about things like the peace movement in the 60s with the baby boomers. Right. Mm-hmm. I've often said when I was a kid, I could tell that was bogus. The whole thing was bogus. It was just fake. And so I've had people who were, you know, they were boomers like, no, we were honest. I was like, well, you were honest, but the setup wasn't honest. The setup was not honest. You know, the setup was done in order to pull certain people out of politics and insert other people into politics. And then they tested and they found that the people that they got inserted, they didn't like. So they got rid of them, like Nixon. So so tell us a little bit about some of that conversation. I want to show what that looks like if people want to go find it online and stuff like that, Charlie, because it was great.
So the Union of the Unwanted, I'll just give you a little bit of background on this. This was a podcast that I did with Sam Tripoli from Tinfoil Hat, Ricky Verandis from The Ripple Effect, and Midnight Mike from OBDM, Our Big Dumb Mouth, one of the funniest podcasts in the world. So the four of us did a show together back in 2021, and we were talking about censorship. And during the course of the call, Mike said, "We're like the Union of the Unwanted." And I was like, cool. Oh man, that'd be such a great name for a band. You know, if we were in a band, you know, and Mike and Ricky were in bands and everything. And so what we decided was we were like, we should do that again. This is Sam talking about it on Rogan.
There you go. You want to play a second of this? We'll play a second of this. Let's check it out. Here we go. Yeah.
Okay. And it's a great show. You too.
Here's what's going to happen.
His own cabinet doesn't want him.
Here's what's going to happen.
Educate him.
We've talked about this on my podcast called The Union of the Unwanted. We talk about all this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's a great show, you guys. So basically what's going to happen.
Union of the Unwanted.
The Union Conspiracy of the Unwanted. Ricky, Charlie, Midnight Mike. Yeah. We get all the crazies to come together, all the people, and they break it down. Yeah. And basically, dude.
Yeah, that's awesome stuff.
Yeah.
And
Sammy.
It is good too. So, yeah. So go ahead. Sorry, man.
I have to tell the backstory on that, because Sam goes on, we get a text and Sam goes, guys, I am so sorry. I just got done recording with Rogan and he asked me at the end to mention all the podcasts I was in, and I forgot to mention our podcast.
Oh,
and we were like, are you kidding? Oh. And then we listened to it and Sam lists off. Sam does 7 podcasts.
Yeah.
And he listed off 6 and he left ours off. And we were like, like you. He felt really bad. That was Rogan Fight Companion a couple weeks ago.
Oh, classic.
And he got a chance to go back on. And we were like, better redeem yourself, sir.
Right, man.
And so he sold it pretty good on there. But what it is it's the four of us, and we start having these round table group discussions about, well, it started with censorship, and then we would invite some people on. Then we'll pick a topic, and we do it every 2 weeks, and we'll pick a topic. We do it Mondays live on Rockfin at 7 p.m. Eastern, if you want to check it out. It's like every other Monday. And, you know, we'll pick something like social media, and then we'll invite Martin from Rockfin, and we'll invite Jeremy Kaufman from Odyssey, and then we'll have Everybody from the float team over. We'll have Matt Raymer from Content Safe, you know, Kingsley from Float, the CEO. And we'll all get together and we'll talk about social media and how it all works best. We did that one time, and the conversation, you see that the CEO of Rockfin and the CEO of Odyssey are talking about how they could work together and streamline a process. And I was like,
yeah, man. And by the way, Jeremy lives like an hour away from me here in New Hampshire.
Jeremy's on there, and he's network, you know, he's talking to these, and we realized the power of these conversations. And so it's a constantly rotating, changing group of people. And sometimes we start one place and we end up going another place, and that's totally cool too. And so this last episode, we started off by talking about, before we even hit record, Ricky was talking about loving heavy metal. And then when we hit record, we didn't even know what we were going to talk about, except Ricky just kept on going about the music industry. And then we started talking about the artificiality of it all and how that's being pushed.
Yes.
And how it feels very right. much like an agenda to demoralize people. We started talking about the Satanism in the music industry, you know, we don't have an outline. We don't know where this conversation is going to wind up going. Monica Perez was on there. Graham from Grimerica was there. Yeah,
it was great. It was great, and it was funny too, Charlie, because you know I check out your feed, you know, a couple times a day, and you know I'm always looking for information, and I love Union of the Unwanted. I always thought it was such a cool title, absolutely, and it's so satisfying what you guys discuss, and this one in particular was just great. And I also want to show people another little item. I put this on the show last night. This one that you posted from the dank night of the Colorado yeah. Secretary of State and her stare, just you the way what? It looks like they superimposed her mouth, like the old, you know, Conan O'Brien thing, like, you know, hey, Conan, what's going on? It's just bizarre.
Totally does. And you know what's even funnier about it is that just coincidentally, I have been in the process of, I live in Colorado. She's from Colorado. I've been in the process of forming a corporation, and I have to go to the Secretary of State for Colorado's website, and it's her face. And I've been working on this process for the last couple of days. So her face has been there. I see it on X. I see it when I'm trying to do my stupid corporation paperwork. I'm just like this. She's everywhere, and she's got those crazy eyes. I'm telling you.
Oh,
man. Tell a lot about people,
man.
And you can tell that they're super duper boosted.
Yeah, yeah. It's absolutely bizarre.
And she's got them. It's such a weird thing. It's like, I mean, as an anarchist, I would never advocate for this, but like, you know, you're going to get the biggest IRS tax audit when Trump gets in office, right? You understand that, don't you, Jenna? You just put a gigantic target on your face that said, orange man take out all his frustrations on me the first week he's in office.
Man. And you know what I love
is that I don't want the state solving problems that the state creates. Let me just be crystal clear.
Yeah,
but I mean, like, when it happens to her, because it's gonna, it's gonna also sort of kind of be funny that
instant karma is gonna get you. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I love the Veruca Salt smile at the end. She's like, you know, it's like, whoa, man, if Willy Wonka were around, he would let you go. And Charlie, one of the things I thought was really cool about today's subject on Union of the Unwanted that was so interesting was you guys were talking about rock and roll, and you know, you get into culture, and so a lot of people, and you sort of touched on this, you know, there's the rock and roll is a perfect example. You've got rock and roll coming in as the, you know, the undercurrent in music and things like that. My dad was a big band swing guy. He loved the power of Gene Krupa on the drums, you know, that swing beat, that swing power. Then you see how that gets utilized later by people like Louis Jordan. They called him the king of the jukebox. There's this drive to it. It's not just sweepy. It's not just waltzy. Young people get attached to that. And so differentiating between what is just something that naturally appeals to especially young guys, or just maybe young girls might like a different kind of music or whatever. But what drives that stuff, and then it gets, you got to get more intense. You got to get more intense. You got to get, yeah. And I'll tell you, one of the weirdest experiences I ever had was I saw, when I was 18, I got to see Ministry at the WFNX radio station's second anniversary. They were like the alternative Boston rock station. Mm-hmm. And by that time, you know, part of your teenage identity, if you're a guy, might have something to do with the music you listen to.
Yeah.
And the music had grown more and more intense, especially as punk came around. It was the pushback against the flower power and all that stuff. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. no, you know, Black Flag, they've got Damaged. Henry Rollins is punching a mirror. It's not the White Flag of Peace. He's got a shaved head and he's punching a freaking mirror, and it's the Black Flag of War, you know? Yeah. So that was our pushback against the baby boomers. How much of that was organic and how much of it was pushed, we don't know. And we'll get to Tavistock perhaps in a minute. I want to get your thoughts on this, because there is something that seems organic about wanting to listen to more and more intense music. There is something about kids finding their bonding and their identity and stuff. There's that term, the conformity of rebellion, right? Goes all the way back to James Dean or others, you know, even the Romantics. They were the rebellious young people at a certain time, you know? So, okay, we got everything from Lord Byron on, who knows, right? But it's that sort of thing that when we see things like rock and roll, I'll never forget. I saw Ministry open up, Ministry play. They were the headline act at this thing. The opening act was this band that I'd never heard of before. A couple German guys with headsets hanging off the rafters of this place in Boston called The Channel with this pre-recorded tape loop stuff. Turned out it was Front 242. And I didn't know it. And then Ministry comes out. And at that time, they only had With Sympathy, which is sort of like a synth pop sort of album. It has some darker stuff on it, like Effigy and stuff. Yeah. And of course, it was before he came out with Twitch, which was heavily influential on Nine Inch Nails. I mean, essentially, if you listen to Pretty Hate Machine, it's just a continuation of the sounds from Twitch. Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, you know, so turned out that I was just like blown away. I was like, wow, this is great. But I'll never forget, my brother, 7 years my elder, he moved back when Front 242 was playing. And I moved forward. And I realized, I knew what was happening at the time. I was like, I'm breaking away from the really good stuff that my brother brought to me, and I'm starting to discover my own music now. And it was I wanted the more intense stuff. So my question to you is, I am very well aware of Tavistock. And I, having worked in television, I'm also very well aware of the fact that in Hollywood, the military-industrial complex does a lot there.
Yeah.
I worked at Star Trek. How much of Star Trek and the United Federation of Planets came from connections Gene Roddenberry might have had, or it was him as a post-World War II guy thinking the United Nations is the answer. We don't want these nation states fighting. We want this United Nations sort of thing. I don't know. But some of this, they're testing the waters. They see what works and they see what doesn't. What do you think about this? As you have this conversation about music, how much do you think is authentic people, you know, the one-upsmanship getting more intense with music? And I'll end it this way. I broke away from it by my senior year in college. I started dating this young woman and we all went to go see the Butthole Surfers. The opening, yeah, at the same club where I saw Ministry 5 years before. And they had an opening act that was so disturbing. I just was like, what am I watching? It was like this, almost like a prepubescent girl running around topless. I mean, she had to have been an adult, I hope. Because that's what I was expecting. It was a 21 and over show. So she had like painted hair, silver painted teeth. And she was just like smearing stuff on herself, going back and forth on the stage to this thrumming beat, and that's all it was. Yeah, and then the Butthole Surfers came out, and they were awful, and they had a projection going over them of like scorpions and tarantulas fighting nature films to freak people out. And then Then they were showing some medical documentary film thing, like an instructional film. And it looked, they were doing some surgical thing, and when they had gauze, and I was looking at it, and I was like, oh, what are they doing? Like a C-section there? What are they cutting?
Oh my God.
It was a sex change operation.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Literally, they had the image of them cutting off this of a guy. And so the girl I was with, she was loving this. And I realized, I was like, you know what? I'm ashamed that my parents would be just ashamed of me being here. This is awful. What am I doing here?
That's funny.
And yeah, and I told everybody, I was like, I'm going home. I just disconnected from a lot of that stuff and just went with. So anyway, so what do you think about that? About, you know, the way they, and it's a big, big subject. Obviously, you guys had a whole podcast about it. But, you know, the same way they test these political things, they have their plans, they see what works. I think they do the same thing with entertainment. What do you think?
Well, I've always referred to Tavistock as the culture factory. You know, they really created a lot of that. They can make things seem cool when maybe they aren't. You know what I mean? Like they become the arbiter of what is the new thing, and they, you know, they're kind of scientific, kind of social studies. There's now a technology side to it as well, you know? So what you see is that a lot of this culture isn't as authentic as we would like it to be. Some of it is manufactured, and and we kind of got into that this last week with regard to the music, because some, you know, just talking about the music feeling very lacking in substance and beat, and you know, like they've taken drums out and it's just that tick 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 tick,
yes,
you know, like that, right. And it's very lazy and everything's auto-tuned, and we just wondered, like, is there going to be some sort of effect where you move back towards authenticity, you know, where you've actually got people playing their own instruments and being able to sing without being auto-tuned out. And what is that market?
And
there's a chance to hang out with Brad from Five Times August at Acapulco. We went out, had some tacos one night.
He's such
a super guy. I met him in Austin earlier in the summer. And he, you know, and he's been a guy who's been speaking out against the medical industrial complex with regard to the COVID situation, and also speaking out against musicians that were with the agenda that made you show proof of vaccination to get into shows and things like that. He's been very vocal in calling them out, and he has paid a price for that. In the sense that his career is handicapped because he's not acceptable.
Yeah, he's not going to be invited on any of the big festival circuits, that's for sure, right?
No, so he plays in Acapulco and places like that, and the American Liberty Awards, which is where I met him the first time around, and that's his little niche, which is fantastic. It's a great group of people.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a much smaller audience. Yeah. And when you're a musician, you've got to also make a business calculation as well, too. You know, I mean, how are you going to support yourself? Are you going to get involved with the mainstream Hollywood line of approaching music? And if you do, where is your line?
That is a big question. And, you know, it's, having worked in LA, I think I might have mentioned to you, you might not have heard this, Charlie, but you know, I had dinner a few years ago with Brandon Braga, my old boss from Star Trek, and we were chatting, and he's like, "Oh, you're a libertarian." I was like, "Oh yeah, you are too." He goes, "How'd you know that?" And I was like, "Because one day I had a Reason magazine T-shirt on underneath my button down, and somebody asked what the shirt was, and you answered immediately. You said, "Oh, it's Reason magazine. It's a libertarian shirt." And I was like, "Only somebody who reads Reason would know what that was, dude." And he goes, "Yeah, you got me." And it's very interesting because he's one of the few. you know, who has been able to continue working in that field as a writer. Sometimes the actors can, you know, they can become big enough where they can speak out for freedom or whatever. You know, you got a Clint Eastwood, you got maybe Drew Carey, who was successful enough. He calls himself a libertarian or something like that, you know. But so many of these other folks, if they're workaday musicians or actors or writers, it's a tough decision. They've really got to decide. And, you know, in the long run, the better decision is always the moral decision, the ethical decision. Because if you lose your soul just so that you can get a car, seriously? Come on. We'll return with more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Thanks for fighting for freedom. Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency made for spending. You can pay your bills with Dash at spritz.finance. Plus, they can send dollars to your bank if you still need those for something. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month for this sponsorship. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can learn more at dash.org. That's dash.org.
Free Talk Live.
We're back on Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Find us every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Rumble, Rockfin, and my Twitter /X. That's at Garth Goldsmith. Continuing our conversation with the great Charlie Robinson of the Macro Aggressions podcast.
I lived in Hollywood. I mean, I lived in L.A. for 25 years and knew people in that business, too. And I remember having a conversation with an agent one day. And he was like, he's like, you need to stay as far away from this industry as possible.
Wow.
Because it's filled with some really dangerous people. And I was like, thank you for the advice.
Yeah.
He's like, I can tell you're a good guy. And I just want to make sure that you understand like what you're walking into.
Oh man.
And this was, I was like right out of college.
And part of that, Charlie, is just the pressure cooker of so many people wanting the jobs, they'll backstab. But the other part of it is that there is a presence there. There are people, there is something there that they utilize. So for example, we talked about Tavistock. Who's the guy who wrote the book, the really good book on Tavistock?
Daniel Estulin.
Estulin, yeah, great book. And, you know, we hear things about Tavistock might have been influential in getting the Beatles out there. Tavistock might have been, Rolling Stones, exactly. And sure, they're talented people, but there are a lot of talented people out there. Why those guys? Why, you know, so, and you can even go back to H.G. Wells, great example. Mm-hmm. How much of H.G. Wells's popularity was because H.G. Wells was a genius writer who had some great stories? And how much of it was because he was tied in with the One Worlders back then, with the eugenics people back then, right?
Yeah, he was a Fabian socialist and he was tied to the Round Table. So it's like they make you popular, just like they make Aldous Huxley popular, George Orwell popular. They are all from that same tree. If you think of it like if you're like a professional football fan, you're like, it's the Bill Walsh tree. You know, it's this tree of people that are very, very similar.
Yeah. And sometimes you get apostates, right? And there'll be people who leave. Now, what do you think? You mentioned Orwell. What do you think of Orwell in the long run after his experience in the Spanish Civil War? You know, I mean, there were clearly some very subtle digs at the one world mindset in 1984, collectivism and so on and so forth. What do you think about him in the long run?
I mean, these guys were all part of this committee of 300, you know, this group of world government guys. And part of it, it made me, they always felt like the PR department for it.
Yeah.
The right. Huxleys and Orwell, you know, all these guys that were the ones that went on to have these H.G. Wells, these guys that went on to have these amazing book careers. And you always kind of wonder, like, you know, there's thousands of books are written each year. Why does one book, I say this as an author, why does one particular book just become way more popular than the others?
Right, right.
Well, because human beings can be manipulated, i.e. here's Tavistock, and they can make some of these books classics that everybody's read. And why have you read it? Well, you're reading what these one world government people want you to think the future is going to look like, so that you'll be just a little bit more predisposed to accept it because you've always kind of in the back of your mind considered it. Right. And for someone like you, who's got a science fiction writing background, you know what I mean? Like you've got to like, you've got just such an amazing opportunity to infuse it with all the stuff that you know about how government really works and just pretend like that's happening a trillion miles away somewhere.
Right.
You know what I mean? But still, and trade you can wars, think about, you know, you start talking about Star Wars and things like that.
Yes. What's
at the core of it? It's like international trade disputes. You're like, oh, that's so boring, but so realistic it's too.
Solid. And as a little blip, that's actually one of the areas with those first Star Wars films where I gave George Lucas, I said, well, you know, some of it was cheesy, but that was a solid thing that he did there. That was good. He understood the way that sort of thing works, you know? Yeah, I also think that, you know, you look at the Lone Gunman with their jet into the towers episode, right? I mean, you know, it's very clear what's going on there, and it is difficult because, you know, you want to be able to distinguish between stuff that is authentic and stuff that isn't, and you want to give credit to the artists when they deserve it. But I'll give you an example. I still have not had this particular book published, Charlie. It got accepted by a publisher, and then the publisher's like editor or PR person emailed me and said, oh, I hadn't signed the contract yet. And they said, oh yeah, we're just wondering if you're going to, you know, change your name for the book because, you know, we see your online presence there and, you know, you might want to, you know, we'll go with a different name. So I wrote her back. I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to take your contract. What I am who I am. You know, you would probably get more people. Yeah, like nobody knows my fiction writing at all, right? But, you know, Free State people might know me from my work. So it was ridiculous. And that book still hasn't gotten published. I declined the contract, you know?
That's funny.
Yeah, it's fascinating, Charlie. Well, look, we better get going. Let me just check in real quick with Rockfin. And the Tavistock people are not promoting Rockfin, but they are good people over at Rockfin. They're very, very cool. And lay down any final thoughts or anything like that you have for folks. I can see they'll probably start naming bands that are really crappy bands that are really be like Tavistock all the way with that one, man. But I got to say, I do love the Stones and I like the psychedelic stuff of the Beatles. So, you know,
I mean, here's the problem is that I've got... If Tavistock was, you know, responsible for the Beatles being popular, their music is fantastic.
Right. Exactly.
So, like, I know there's, you know, I buried Paul and all that stuff, all the subliminal things going on in the background. And I'm interested in that. But I don't know. I don't know how much the Rolling Stones or the Beatles actually needed Tavistock, but they got them. Right. They at least understood that the connection that a band has with the audience is very valuable.
And they can use that.
If they can get into that somehow, that's an advantage for them. But I think that they recognize that, like, the Beatles made people faint at the airports. You know what I mean? And I know some of that stuff was staged and I know that some of it was played up a little bit early on, but it became a self-fulfilling prophecy at some point because it was actually happening for real later on in their careers. And then the Stones too. Holy
And again, you know, to go back to this portion we were discussing about entertainment, how much of the, you know, the push towards nihilism, the push towards things like, you know, gangster rap and stuff like that, how much of it was authentic? How much because kids are going to be oriented towards more power, more aggression. Get out your, you know, expression my aggression through my schizophrenic verse words, as the Beasties would say, right? And how much of it is sort of a combination? You know, you got these giant corporations. I don't know. I'm never going to be able to sort of, you know, untie that Gordian knot. I'm not going to be able to figure that out. But it is interesting to find people who are clued into this to say that can be utilized. People can lever off of that. And they're starting to see this, whether it's watching Nicole Kidman eat the bugs or whatever. We know that there are forces that try to either push people in front of us or take the people that we've recognized as popular and suborn them, use them to their advantage, use a vibe, a particular movement that then can then be undercut. The peace movement in the 60s, start a movement, you know, in the canyon, right out in California, whatever it might be, and then start to push that. If they see a nascent, just starting sort of thing, let's give that some money. Let's give Jackson Pollock some paints, some art, you know, some art money. And we'll start this nihilistic form of artwork that is, you know, goes back to Derrida and the Dada-esque movement and the absurdists and stuff like that, but it has utterly no value, just like that stuff, you know? Interesting stuff. Final thoughts over at Rockfin and Rumble for Charlie. Charlie, again, while I'm checking it out, again, we want to mention, if people want to find you on Twitter/X, the best way to find you on Twitter/X.
At macroaggression.
Cool. You can excellent.
Find me there. And I, yeah. Where and, I argue with robots.
Yeah.
And
you argue
get
with
myself
robots.
All worked up over nothing. Pretty much.
Well, you know. It's you can but do the robot. Fun. You can do a little Herbie.
You have to appreciate the absurdity of Twitter. You know, I mean, it's, I used to not like it. I've come around to appreciating it now, and so I see there's some amazing people out there that understand that find the humor in all of this insanity, and I appreciate them.
Final thought, do you think, what do you think of Musk? Do you think he's straight up, or do you think he's a giant long-term faker out there?
I think he's a giant long-term faker out there. Yeah, I think he makes some great products that are super necessary and needed.
Yeah.
And, but the bulk of his money is tied in some form or fashion to the government.
Exactly.
And it's, and I like some of the things he says, but then I don't see the results on X that I would like to see, as far as like the unbridled unshackling of all of our accounts,
mm-hmm.
because it's a real thing, you know. I mean, it's just, it's like they've got weights on us.
Yeah.
Press and it's so it's really it's super annoying, just because you just would like to imagine it's kind of a level playing field, and it's not. So it'd be nice if he could fix that.
Yeah, exactly.
I do like that he fights with the Google guys. I do like that he fights with the, I mean, you know, there's some parts of him that I find entertaining, but I feel about him like the same way I feel about Trump, which is like, he's a disruptive guy. He sometimes gives my enemies a hard time, so I like that. But yeah. I don't trust him. Like, I don't trust Trump. I don't trust Elon. These aren't people you trust, but what do I take joy in watching them make other people insane? Oh yeah, that's fun. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The idea that these people get so like broken by Trump is hilarious to me.
It is. And
crippled. Like Keith Olbermann is completely coming unhinged. And it is the funniest thing in the world, because I remember as a kid watching him do the sports in LA. And then he went on to SportsCenter, and then he went on to MSNBC, and then now he's an unhinged maniac in his penthouse apartment overlooking Central Park, and Donald Trump is living in his head, and it is the funniest thing on Twitter.
Oh, man. Sometimes I wonder how he can get his arms out of the straitjacket in order to operate the camera, but he has a way. It's a very Houdini-esque sort of thing.
It is funny. He just really takes it so personally in that to me, you know, so again, I'm trying to also find the humor in this, you know.
That's it.
And I take in advantage. The intro that you read of the book where it says, you know, it mentioned it being humorous book. Like, how do you make this stuff funny?
Yeah.
There's a way to make it funny.
Absolutely, but I
border on being disrespectful sometimes too. Oh, by the way, the octopus you mentioned it in there. That image is borrowed from National Reconnaissance Office NROL-39.
I think I heard you mention that somewhere.
And
that's actually like a government image or something like that, right?
Yeah, it's from the NRO launching a spy satellite with that octopus. The octopus is yellow in that. And instead of the octopus of global control, it says nothing is beyond our reach.
Wow.
With that yellow octopus on top of the Earth. So that's why it got...
Unbelievable.
That's why.
Unbelievable. Wow. Hey, by the way, Charlie, we had a great comment over in Rumble. Risha M said, I told my own son that listening to his hate music won't serve him well for his future. And it is tough. You know, it's like Johnny Lydon said, anger is an energy, but you got to be very careful of it, you know? And by the way, one of our good friends, Tom Cooper, he has as his avatar a Misfits Fiend Club skull face, you know, from some horror movie originally. Yeah. So and I'm gonna check out final comments here. Let's see.
Gardo, have you know? I saw Ministry in concert in 92.
Whoa.
At Lollapalooza.
Wow.
And I saw Sublime in 93 in Huntington Beach, and it was the scariest concert I've ever been to.
Really?
It was you talked about like energetic music and guys kind of like, it was, there's this kind of pit where they were down in this pit playing, and there's like a dance floor, and I was standing at the top of it. And I was not really getting ready to go down in there. And I was standing next to my friend, and these guys were coming up from the pit, and they walked right by us. And as they did, I heard the guy go, "Dude, check it out. It's my tooth." And he had it in his hand, it's the palm of his hand, because they were down in there like this seriously scary mosh pit. You know,
where
it's like a hurricane of people.
Yeah.
And Sublime is like, this is before anybody knows who they are. No, this was 92, actually.
Wow. I would never have thought that Sublime would stir that in people. That's
intense.
They were
so good in concert. Oh, my God. Wow. I could not believe how good they were, because I didn't know who they were until I saw them live.
Oh,
and after that, I was like, that band is super talented, because they all stopped in the middle of the song, changed instruments, and then just kept playing like and they just kept doing that throughout the night. I was just like, these guys are like really talented, but
that's
it was
awesome.
The scariest like white trash crowd ever.
Well, you know, that reminds me of like
I'm as white as they get, and I was like creeped out. I was like, this is like, I don't know if you ever spent any time in like in Huntington Beach particular. There's a dark white element to it.
Yes.
There's something going on there.
Yes.
And I think we were in one of those like concerts, but the energy was like off the charts, and it was, some of those you just remember.
Dude, my tooth. Oh, that's funny. Look, I'll tell you the story later when I was in Birmingham just before the U.S. was going to invade Iraq, and I was seeing the Damned, and people realized I was an American and I was in the mosh pit, and it got pretty scary.
Oh,
it was pretty crazy. Charlie, thanks so much, man.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, so good. And somebody has here. Let me see. So we've got, Freegan Fregan says, I invented the name The Charlie Robinson Show for Charlie. True story.
Well, that's what that's what my TNT show was. The Charlie Robinson Show. It went away because they wanted me to do three guests an hour.
Yes.
And I just couldn't do that.
You got to do so much research. You just can't go with all these guests and stuff.
There's only so much I can do before I check myself into the nut house, and that would have definitely done it for me. So,
You had me on, and I appreciate that, man. That was awesome. Know.
And I was so glad that you came on. Thank you for coming on. You were part of the very select 5-week period of doing those daily shows.
That was a good job, though. I know. And they handled me beautifully in the backstage. They were really nice. And, you were awesome. And
Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Yeah, you got it, man. Thank you so much. And by the way, we got Pork Fest coming up. I hope you can make it at the end of June.
So too.
It'll be great. Yeah. Tony will be there, hopefully. And Billy Ray, hopefully. Maybe Don Jeffries. And it'll be up in northern New Hampshire. And Carla will welcome
you. I met Carla. Yep. Carla's my buddy now. We met at an Acapulco. She's the coolest.
Oh, yep. She is great. I owe her not a lot of money, but a lot of high fives. That's for sure. So, Charlie, I give you the high five. Thank you, brother. I'll leave this with you for just a minute, and then I'll come back. And then we'll say fare thee well. Okay.
One might be bewildered to discover that some principal defenders of the right to keep and bear arms are supporting a Georgia bill that ostensibly puts state power behind the right to self-defense, but which actually undercuts other fundamental rights. Hi, everyone. I'm Gardner Goldsmith for MRC TV. Yeah, this is a perplexing, troubling situation for many people who believe in rights. Bearing Arms' Cam Edwards reports on the status of this Georgia legislation. Quote, under HB 1364, introduced by Representative Martin Momtahan, property owners who forbid lawful concealed carry would assume responsibility for the safety of their customers, which means they would be liable for any injuries suffered if they're unable to protect themselves on the premises. Well, such a proposal might appeal to people who recall the horrific 1991 experience of Susanna Hupp, who had a firearm in her car, but because Texas law at the time forbade it, she didn't bring the weapon into the Killeen, Texas restaurant where a mass shooter soon killed 24 people. Or it might appeal to people who recall the more recent fact that numerous victims of a mass shooter in Lewiston, Maine, were inside a bowling alley that had a sign on the door indicating it was gun-free. As crime researcher John Lott has explained, people with criminally violent intent tend to avoid places where they can reasonably surmise that potential victims might be armed. But those who might support this bill in Georgia or the idea of proposing similar legislation elsewhere, for example, the Wyoming House just passed a wide block of gun-free zones on government property, but it doesn't apply to private choice on private property. While supporters in Georgia or potentially in other states might want to reconsider and consider the rights they attack when pushing this kind of bill. Edwards refers to Doug Richards's TV 11 Atlanta report on the proposal, which features quotes from Representative Momtahan.
All we want to make sure is if you're in the store or you're anywhere and that has a no gun sign, then that school needs to understand that they have absolute custodial care of that person.
In other words, this bill claims for the state the power to tell a property owner and his potential client that they can't engage in freedom of association on their own terms. The terms are being imposed by the government. When someone owns private property and asks another person to enter on certain terms, he has a right to ask, and the potential visitor has a right to decline. Such freedom allows others to see and test those earlier arrangements. By claiming that the property owner would take on the obligation of custodial care. When a customer enters his private property, Mr. Montahan is imposing his own will on the others. It's the politician telling the property owner that he takes on that obligation. In fact, when two parties agree to one gaining admittance into the property of another, the other takes on contractual care, not state-mandated custodial care. And this bill breaches their right to engage in contracts on their own terms. Let me offer an example. For many of our teenage years, my brother and I used to swim in a quarry close to our house. And the owners, who were attorneys, allowed us to go once our family paid $20 and signed a waiver of liability, stipulating that if we got hurt there, the owner wouldn't be liable for our actions. This Georgia bill stands in complete contradistinction from that privately reached form of agreement. It implies that private property is somehow public.
Thanks for listening to Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warden.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.